Well, good morning and welcome to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. Also listening to us on 88.1 WSBR in Lee, Lennox, and Stockbridge. Watching us on the PCTV Select app, which you can download for free. And also watching us on cable channel 1301 Access Pittsfield. Sean Sayre here with you on June 4th, Thursday. Wonderful, beautiful morning out there. It's going to be a nice summer day for sure today. Looking forward to that and looking forward to the show this morning, which you'll hear in just a moment. We have folks from the Berkshire Museum talking about their reopening on July 29th and a celebration weekend shortly after that. We're going to talk all about what people will find when they come back to the museum and look around and see all the changes, all the beautiful things that are there at the Berkshire Museum. Looking forward to that conversation here in just a moment. First, let's get to that weather forecast and see what we have in store for us today from the National Weather Service. Here it is. Berkshire
weather. WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Rest of tonight, mostly clear. Near steady temperature in the mid-50s. West wind around 5 miles per hour. Thursday, sunny. Highs in the mid-80s. West wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. Thursday night, mostly clear. Lows in the mid-50s. West wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
And it's about 56 degrees outside right now under sunny skies. Blue skies out there for sure. A nice day. We're going to get up there. It's going to feel like summer today. Maybe not 90 degree summer, but summer nonetheless. It'll be feel like a nice day. We deserve that. All right. Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR FM. And with me today, we have Kim Bush Tomeo, who's the executive director of the Berkshire Museum, and Will Doerr. He is a curator. Good morning to both of you. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you.
Good
Happy
morning.
To be here.
Thank you. Yeah.
Great to have you, and so many exciting things happening. Obviously, there's a ton of work that's been going on at the Berkshire Museum over the last months and years. We want to explore all of that this morning and talk about what's been happening and what we're anticipating to happen over the next couple of months or so. Give us a little profile of the two of you. Kim, give us a little background on how long you've been at the museum and the kinds of things that you did before you got here.
Well, first of all, I'm very happy to be here. This is a great place. I've been at the Berkshire Museum now for almost 4 years. I came from the San Francisco area, where I was at the Asian Art Museum of San Francisco for 10 years.
Oh, okay.
Before that, I was a director of a museum in Texas, a small museum in Texas. I've worked at a lot of different museums. Mm-hmm. I've been at the Dallas Museum and also at the Whitney. So this is, for me, my last, My last position that I would like to end my career with is being at this museum, because I read about it when I was looking for another position and had such, a feeling of such importance of this for this community, that the Berkshire Museum, was in a position to really start moving forward in its history. So that's what brought me here.
How did you get into the career? What attracted you to be a museum person?
Oh, well, I received my undergraduate degree in art. I was a painter, and I started a master's program in art history in Dallas, and I ended up not finishing that degree, but started working at the museum at the university that I was in graduate school for. And so that pretty much started it for me. And then I went from there to New York City, to the Whitney. And then from there, I just kept moving on to different places. So, I have had 40 years experience, maybe a little bit more in museum world. So it all started with the arts.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Amazing how that kind of seeps in, right?
Yeah.
And they say, okay, well, this is it.
Yeah.
And Will Doerr, give us a little background on yourself. How long have you been at the museum, and what brought you to this point in this career?
I moved actually down here back in 2008 from Canada with my parents. And I was going to university up in Canada and come back to visit home over the summer, and started doing internships at the Berkshire Museum, cataloging collections and working on early exhibitions, and after I graduated, I started doing some contract preparator work around the county, and then kind of stuck here. Mm-hmm. It was a very welcoming place, mm-hmm. Berkshire Museum, mm-hmm. in Berkshire County and Pittsfield in particular. Great diverse collection, great people, and really found a home.
That's great. And how many years overall has that been? Sounds like
since 2008.
2008. So that's quite a bit of time. Yeah. And so let's talk about the museum's transformation, if you will. Certainly, it has been a long journey to this point where we're going to be reopening the museum here in July. And the big announcement that people haven't seen, I guess maybe I won't step on that for you. What is the big announcement and what's happening in July?
Do you want to take it from, you can?
No.
Okay. Okay. You want me to start?
Yeah.
Okay. So this renovation project has taken us almost a little over a year and a half.
Yeah.
We started it in January of last year. And the concept for the renovated spaces was unfolded with the help of the staff.
Mm-hmm. And during that time, the museum has been closed.
We were completely before we closed, the staff worked together with me and the board to come up with a concept for the renovation and what we wanted to do with our spaces, mm-hmm. because the building is, as you know, it's pretty old. It was mm-hmm. built originally in 1903, the original component of it, and it expanded over time, but it was ready for a facelift basically on the inside.
Yeah.
And so that whole process of developing what we wanted the spaces to be took about a couple of years overall, I think.
Yeah.
The staff was doing a lot of research. Mm-hmm. They were going to other museums and talking to other colleagues and professionals in the field. And then it was really the staff's vision that really got us to where we are.
Right.
Yeah.
And so a much longer process than the 18 months of construction, right?
Yes.
Much longer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of what we want to try to focus on is have a renewed, refreshed, and new flexible spaces that didn't lose contact and touch and familiarity with the past.
Mm-hmm.
If you come to the museum and you've been coming for years, there's a lot you will recognize, but it'll be given new modern interpretation, new modern feel. And the flexibility to know that every time you come, you're going to see new things.
Mm-hmm.
And so take us through what people might expect when they come in. And did we mention the date yet? There's a big date coming up, right?
It's July 29th.
July 29th.
We open to the public. And I think it's going to be hopefully a real crowd of people coming through and enjoying what they see. So when they come into the building, when they open the doors and come in, There'll be that. There's a beautiful work by Tom Patty, a glass artist, mm-hmm. who is just a gorgeous piece that is installed in the archway, the original archway of the building, it's been covered during this whole construction time to protect it, and they just uncovered it a couple days ago. And when I walked in the other day, it was like, oh my gosh, I remember how beautiful this is. That will look familiar, but the rest of the spaces that they will navigate will look very different in a lot of ways. The new gift shop has all new cabinetry, glass wall, you know, just gorgeous space. The lobby area has been renovated to be much more warm and comfortable for people to come through.
Mm-hmm.
And that space is really, it's going to be very multi-use kind of space.
Yeah, the lobby will also just be a little more user-friendly,
mm-hmm.
too. Just move the front desk, which sounds small.
Mm-hmm.
But
that was a big one.
It really was a big one.
Yeah.
When you get those long lines, now they actually have space to kind of walk into the space, familiarize themselves, and then approach the ticket counter.
Mm.
They also opened up walls so that instead of a small passageway between the lobby and the next large room, it's now a very wide opening. Mm. And it leads into a new space for, we're calling it a multi-purpose space, but it's basically like a lecture hall that can be also used for special events, dinners, children's activities in there, shows, things like that. Because we did take out the theater in the center of the building to put the aquarium in that space.
Okay. Yeah, and I think a lot of people imagining right now as they're listening on the radio, which we're trying to, you know, paint the picture of what everything looks like, they're imagining their last experience there probably of walking through and walking. This is what I'm doing as you're describing it. Walking in and then turning left, and then the desk is over here, right? And then there's that door that goes into the first spaces, and or if you go this way, you're up, you know, into the theater. So, you know, without burying the lead here, the big headline idea is the aquarium. And that was even during the times when people remember the museum and bringing their kids. The event a lot of times was going down into the basement and going to walk through the aquarium, right? So that is kind of like the headlining feature now of the museum. Do I have that right?
You are correct.
Okay. So let's describe that for people. So the theater, the old theater is gone. That space now is the aquarium. Was there more than that space too, or is it basically just that enclosed in where the theater was?
It's that space, but what it really did was enable to like really open up the old aquarium, right? When it was downstairs, we loved our aquarium. It was a little difficult to access, especially if you required the elevator. It was the back of the building. It felt a little, the ceilings were lower, so there's limitations on how tall tanks we could put, and the back of house space was rather cramped. It really limited our ability to kind of provide the best experiences. Now that it's up on the first floor, not only is it much easier to access, we have two main entry walkways that you can just walk straight in from two sides of the museum. Much higher ceilings allow for much larger tanks. I think the total space is almost two times as large as the old aquarium.
Wow.
And in terms of just the total amount of water in some of these tanks, it's even more than that. Allows more efficient animals, including a Caribbean octopus, moon jellyfish, a bamboo shark. And along with
What is a bamboo shark and how big is it?
It's about, I think they can get up to about 3 feet long.
Wow.
It's a particular type of shark that exists around Indonesia and South China Sea and around Vietnam and Eastern India.
Huh.
It's a very fascinating creature. I'm very excited. But along
is the shark in the house now?
It's not in the house yet.
Not in the house yet?
Okay. It's coming. I'm very excited for that part. But along with kind of the other fish that we have and the sea life that we have, we also have the snakes that are coming back upstairs. There's a bearded dragon coming in too, along with the other familiar turtles and other reptiles.
A bearded dragon. Tell me what that is.
It's a
large lizard.
It's a large lizard.
It's a large lizard.
All right.
There's also an aquaponics tank that we decided to put in because a lot of what we want to teach to especially young people and adults, of course, is how important the oceans are and the environment has to be protected because of what's happening in the world with, you know, greenhouse gases and all of that. So the aquaponics tank is something that we're growing the food for the terrestrial animals in that. And we're going to teach about that as well. So I think it's a really good educational experience for all people of all ages.
So. And like another great part about being the first floor is it can feel much more connected with some of our other spaces. One of our other spaces is called Immersed in Nature. Brings a lot of the wildlife that people would have been familiar with, Berkshire Backyard, still in the space. But now it actually still feels part of the same experience because you can walk straight in.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, it does feel like the aquarium was a bit disconnected from the rest of the spaces.
Yeah.
And I would imagine, too, that the building being 123 years old, do you have any history of whether there was an aquarium at the museum when it was first created, or was that something that was added later?
It is a complicated history.
Is it really?
I
love complicated history.
It's really interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
So it's a little bit of a misnomer to say the entire building is 123 years old.
Okay.
If you've been to the museum, the original 1903 building was essentially the lobby and gift shop, two floors of it.
Okay.
So those first galleries upstairs and the lobby and gift shop area, I mean, they were galleries back then.
Sure.
But that was it. And then over the next 10, 15 years, they progressively added wings to kind of enclose a courtyard. Right? And that took place between 1903 and 1917, I think is when they finally enclosed it in four different stages. And then in 1936, they filled in the courtyard with the Ellen Cray Memorial Room on the second floor and the then theater on the first floor.
And so that courtyard and that middle part is
that was it.
Was originally an outdoor space.
Yes. Yeah. And actually, there were windows that led from that space into the building to help light the galleries. So it was interesting when we took when we demolished the theater, we could see the old window opening spaces. It was really interesting.
Yeah.
And that would make sense, too, because you would have needed a lot more natural light, right? Because the lighting back then was different than the lighting that we think of today.
Yeah.
Well, it's actually like an interesting story. When they first built the 1903 building, they were prepared to put all the gas lines in. And then they were just at that point where, before they finished the project, they put the electrical lines in.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was interesting.
So they almost had gas lighting.
Yeah, they still have the piping for the gas lighting in the old building.
Wow.
Yeah, but literally months before they finished, they switched to the electrical, which was great. That would have been really hard. Yeah.
And so obviously there are challenges, right, when it comes to taking an older building like that and reimagining it the way that people are about to see when they come back. And we'll remind people again, July 29th is the day, the opening day of the Berkshire Museum after 18 months of construction and sounds like years of work and reimagining. Yeah. So what are some of the challenges that the old building posed when it came to bringing these new spaces to life?
Some of it's a lot of the behind-the-scenes challenges.
Sure.
Because the way they built it progressively caused some kind of just structural challenges that 100 years later, whether it was elements of the basement still aren't aligned. There's dips by certain areas to accommodate the floor.
The other thing is the cement, the concrete and cement that is so old was very hard to break up. I mean, they had to bring in huge pieces of equipment that are used on highways, basically, to get the theater to a place where they can put a new floor in that's not slanted. And,
do all that. And even just things like modern insulation.
Oh, yeah.
One of the big things, but especially this renovation, is the modern insulation they put will actually allow us to be more energy efficient, which is always great to be more green.
Sure. And those are things, again, that couldn't have been imagined in 1903 or 1917 or whenever it was done, right? Those were not concerns at that time. I assume some of the materials, like you mentioned, the concrete, there's probably a lot of other kinds of materials that you had to sort of abate, right? And get rid of and, you know, dispose of correctly. I think whenever you're dealing with an older building, right, that's going to pop up.
Going back to your question about the aquarium, how it happened, there was we had an education department at one point. Well, we still do, but one of our staff members brought in a single aquarium because it was a Tom.
It was before Tom.
Oh, okay.
It was back in like the 1930s.
Oh, okay.
And back in one of the front corners of the building, there was originally a small children's room, and she, I can't remember her name off the top of my head. It'll hit me in a second. She started bringing in small animals.
This is the director of education.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Frances Palmer.
Oh, Frances Palmer.
And it was originally like a tarantula. And then there was a story in the newspaper about how they had brought multiple tarantulas and they were fighting. And there was an armadillo called Amy.
Yeah.
That would run around the museum.
Amy the armadillo.
Yeah.
Amy
the armadillo. Untie your shoes.
So she had Amy had free run of the museum for a while.
Right. So
not in the gallery.
No. In the director's office.
Yeah.
Are armadillos friendly?
Yeah, they're pretty nice.
Okay. Amy was.
Yeah.
Good to know.
Yeah.
So in some ways, it actually started on the first floor. Yeah. And then Tom Smith actually expanded it to the aquarium that we know back in, I think, a while ago.
Yeah.
And then he built out that space in the basement.
Okay.
And again, they've done great work providing that amazing space. A lot of people connected.
That's a lot of the stories I hear are about the aquarium.
Yeah.
And also about our mummy. The two things that come up all the time in conversations is Pahat, the mummy on the second floor, and then the aquarium.
Yeah.
That's what the families tend to talk about a lot.
I think we're the only aquarium for, I can't remember exactly how many miles it is from Pittsfield, 60 miles or something. Mm.
At least an hour's drive, probably.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and same with the mummy, too. Yeah. You want to see a mummy in Berkshire County.
We got one.
And some of that was the vision of the founders of the museum, knowing that the Berkshire County needed to have an institution like the Berkshire Museum, right? And it has certainly evolved over the years, and this is another evolution, another chapter in the story. Folks from the Berkshire Museum, my guest here on Morning Drive this morning, Kim Bush Tomeo and Will Doerr are here talking about the reopening of the museum, which is going to be happening on July 29th, so coming right up. They just had a major press release about that a couple of days ago, so it's good timing here to be able to talk about it today and let people know that you might want to put that on your calendar, July 29th. And also, I hear that there's going to be an opening celebration weekend after that opening date. We'll talk about that more in the second half, because I'm still fascinated about some of the things that people are going to see when the museum reopens. And I guess back to the building just momentarily, I think of the aquarium and sort of being tucked away in that basement space. There are things, you know, when people walk through an aquarium and enjoy the exhibits and walk around, but there's a lot of stuff going on in the background of that, right? There's has to be machinery. There has to be, you know, ways that you can take care of the animals. Right? There has to be some support stuff going on. So that's all moved up now to the first floor as well. Did that help free up some space like that so that you can have a better sort of service of what happens in behind the scenes?
Oh, certainly. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And that process isn't entirely finished, right? But as soon as that process does finish, because the old aquarium is essentially still online as we're caring for the animals people have loved for years, starting to move them upstairs. Mm. But that will then open its way for additional storage of objects, art.
So during this whole time, the old aquarium has still been like... the animals, fish and wildlife, whatever, were not taken out of the museum. They had to be cared for this entire time.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so then there's going to be a process of bringing them up. So that is that ongoing now, or is that still in the works?
It's ongoing. Yeah. It's much more complicated than I thought it was going to be. But it's rounds of cycling water and quarantine periods just to make sure the animals are as expertly cared and responsibly cared for as possible. Mm-hmm. And John Bergkazu, our aquarium director, and Jordan, our aquarium manager, experts in the field, doing a great job.
There will be some potential tours behind the scenes of the new aquarium. So it's not a lot of space for a lot of people, but occasionally we will bring people back and they'll see all the new equipment that they put in place. I mean, it's quite an operation. Mm. And they did make sure that they had a room for animals that had to be quarantined if they were sick. Mm. And also we quarantined the new animals that are coming in before they get put into the tank so that they're healthy and they're ready to go in.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to see that them come in the mail. I mean, the boxes, a box will arrive and there'll be fish inside.
Mail.
Yes. It's really interesting. But it's going to be really fun, I think. And two of the passageways... into that space have glass walkways. So when you walk into the aquarium space, you're walking on a glass walkway that lights up underneath. And
sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, it kind of looks a little bit like water moving. And there's also a skeleton of a mosasaur that will be hanging from the ceiling. It's a small version, but it's full scale.
I think so. It's a small mosasaur, though.
Okay. All right.
Full scale small moles.
I thought it was. It's going to hang from the. So that's a whale from prehistoric time. So it's all these teaching moments that we want to do.
Teaching and immersion.
Yeah.
Right. Really trying to make the space feel as it should. Right. Mm-hmm. Really help you get captured by the experience. Mm-hmm.
And it will be an experience. And I'm imagining the space, the extra space, as you said, if you're walking through something and something is hanging above you, there's no way you could have done that in the old aquarium.
Right.
I remember the low ceilings and it felt very different there. So,
they were pretty, that was an original immersive space because of the low ceilings and it was smaller, but this is going to feel a lot more open.
So museum and aquarium aside here, let's think about the other parts of the building that are being transformed, right? So one of the things is new and some renewed galleries. So tell me about some of that to sort of paint the picture for us there. What will we see when we walk through and experience that will be different to us than what we remember from the space?
Probably where I start with is our cabinets of curiosities. It'll be one of the early experiences you see when you come into the museum. And really where we started with that is our original mission at the museum, trying to draw connections between art, history, and science. What we wanted to do is bring some of the historical collections and artistic collections down from the second floor to that first floor and help engage people in exploring those connections. So in the Cabinets of Curiosities, we've got 8 different cabinet cases with different themes. We have shells, ivory, jewelry, writing, weaponry, clothing, currency, and Americana. But we're not just filling the shells with just shells. We're trying to make connections across these different themes and try to help people or encourage people to explore and engage their curiosity while they're exploring that space.
Is a good display something that naturally, as you walk through, you make those connections without someone have to explain to you what it is? Like, you just explained it to me, and I can imagine myself walking through. But if I were to walk through, would I then, you know, see one thing and then see another thing and connect the two and say, now I understand why they've done that?
I think so, right? I think it's both. Doesn't need somebody telling you all the information up front, but it also doesn't reveal everything immediately.
Mm-hmm.
For example, we mentioned shells. We have a shells cabinet, but we're also putting shells in currency, right? Shells are used and have been used in certain parts of the world as kind of a trading currency. Mm-hmm. Shells also appears on jewelry, on different clothing.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you walk into the space and you start seeing these things pop up in multiple different cabinets and start exploring, well, what else are we finding?
Right. And that's why you go.
Yeah. And
to
come
explore
back.
and to find and to learn, right? We're speaking with Berkshire Museum folks, Kim Bush Tomio and Will Dorr. They are telling us about the reopening of the Berkshire Museum, which is happening on July 29th. Happens to be my birthday, by the way.
So
you picked a good day. And then, of course, there's also an opening celebration weekend happening on Friday, August 7th to Saturday, August 8th. We'll talk more about that in the second half of the show. Still more to talk about with what will be happening. And, you know, I really want to get into also a bit of a news item that happened a few months ago while you were working in some of the lower areas, and someone found an item that needed some special attention.
You get to talk about that.
So we'll want to talk about that. I saw it in the newspaper, and I wanted to ask on the show what that was like when that came up. And I think people probably know what I'm talking about, but we'll start the second half of the show with that and just ask you some stories about that. All right, first, let's get our break. We do have our top of the hour break. We'll take briefly here, and we'll come back with more about the Berkshire Museum, the reopening on July 29th. This is Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio, and we'll be right back after this.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR-FM.
Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield, 88.1 WSBR, Lee.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs to help our community thrive. Greylock Federal, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org.
And from UCP of Western Massachusetts, the Northern Berkshire Early Intervention Program is now accepting applications for an occupational therapist to support child development, empower families, and change futures. 2026 graduates welcome to apply. Apply today at ucpwma.org.
Hey, it's Sean from WTBR-FM. Whether you just found this station for the first time or you've been listening for years, you might not know everything about WTBR-FM. Want to find out more? It's easy. Just go to WTBRFM.com. You can find full programming schedules, listen to the station anywhere in the world, subscribe to our podcasts, and even learn to create a program of your own. And of course, donate to the station. That's WTBRFM.com. Check it out today.
Berkshire Running Foundation was created to advance and support the positive impact the running community has in the neighborhoods we live. In the past decade, we have been able to donate over $300,000 to dozens of nonprofit organizations here in Berkshire County through our races and free wellness programming. Please visit berkshirerun.org to support our mission to continue to have a social and economic impact on the Berkshires.
Hey friends, if you're looking for some party music, tune in to Polka Express with me, Bill Gustavus, every Wednesday night from 6 to 8, and Sunday mornings from 8 to 10, right here on 89.7 WTBR, Pittsfield, Massachusetts.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. Free community college for any Massachusetts resident without a bachelor's degree at BCC. Find out more at berkshirecc.edu, and from Santrini Awnings and Home Improvement, providing awnings and canopies in Western Massachusetts, retractable awnings, retractable screen, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings and screen rooms, customized solutions available online at santrini.com.
Radio for people who used to love radio. Welcome back. WTBR.
And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
All right, welcome back to Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. And Sean Sayre here with you on Thursday, June 4th. A beautiful day out there it's going to be. Getting to about 60 degrees right now on the thermostat. We're looking nicer and nicer every moment. Getting back to the conversation we have with the folks from the Berkshire Museum in just a moment. First, let's do that weather forecast and see what we have in store for us for the rest of today. Here we go.
Berkshire weather.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Rest of tonight, mostly clear. Near steady temperature in the mid-50s. West wind around 5 miles per hour. Thursday, sunny. Highs in the mid-80s. West wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. Thursday night, mostly clear. Lows in the mid-50s. West wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
Yeah, and one of the nice things about this time of the year is the sleeping weather is also kind of nice. So, you know, nice days and cooler nights before we start getting into that, you know, the weather that you can wear, the stuff that just sticks to you. You know, we haven't quite gotten there yet, so enjoy it while you can. Morning Drive again on 89.7 WTBR-FM, and Kim Bush Tomeo and Will Doerr, thanks again for being here this morning and telling us all about the great things happening at the Berkshire Museum and the great reopening happening on July 29th, only about, what, 6 weeks from now-ish, somewhere in that range, six, seven weeks. This has been, it sounds like, a very tight timeline from the 18 months, you said, of closing and construction on the inside. I can't imagine what that Gantt chart must have looked like, putting that all together and figuring that all out. Along those lines, during the process, I'm sure the permanent collections had all been sort of gone through and reviewed and, you know, what's going to go where and things like that. And there was a story in the newspaper a few months ago, I want to say, about a particular artifact that you turned up, or someone turned up at the museum, that required a little bit of special handling. Tell us about that.
Well, one of the great things about our collection is not just how large it is. I think it's hard to get exact estimates, around 60,000 objects.
And where is all that kept, if people don't see it?
In the basement, in specialized storage facilities, or on display. Mm-hmm. And while we were doing some reviews for some of our weapons collection, one of the objects that our collections manager was looking at was a World War I artillery shell. And it's been around in the building since about 1920s, I think, off the top of my head. And
was it something that was on display at one point? Not at that moment, but may it ever have been on display?
We don't have any records of it being on display.
Okay.
I know it was one of the objects I first looked at when I first got to the museum. And one of the things we've run into in the past is some of the transfer between like paper records and digital records, reviews of certain objects are still making that transfer. And so when our collections manager found this object, he wanted to, out of abundance of caution, make sure that it was taken care of. And so we called the proper authorities to make sure we got the full review of all these different pieces.
So there, at the time that was found, you didn't know whether it was inert or active, right?
I think that originally we thought they were inert. Uh-huh. But again, he just wanted to double check and make sure.
And then what was the determination? What actually was the deal with it, with that item?
So when they brought in the authorities, they did. So actually,
who had to come in?
So I think it was the state police came in. And they ended up doing several x-rays of several of the objects. They had cameras down. Mm-hmm. And then they didn't just stop at that one item. They wanted to, while they're there, actually make sure and check all these other objects are safe. And in the x-rays, one of them, I think the shell in particular, it was hard for them to get a clear read on the x-ray. And then again, at an abundance of caution, They took the object for further tests.
Yeah.
It's no longer in the collection.
No longer
here.
And so, but was there a final determination when they took it out? Did they blow it up somewhere? And what happened?
It's a good question.
I know it's been destroyed.
Yeah. Okay.
You know,
yeah.
I think they had to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there was some material in it that could have been a problem.
Yep.
I think that's why they took it out.
Yeah. And so does that sort of fit in with other items that the museum has in its collection? Like how would it have, who would have brought it in originally and what would have been the purpose?
So it would have been brought in the 1920s, so just after World War I.
Okay.
And at the time, same with after World War II, you had both like armaments factories in Massachusetts and veterans coming home. The 1920s, I think, I can't remember exactly where this one, which donor this one came from. It might have just come from Springfield as an attempt to document the war.
Yeah. Makes perfect sense, right?
Yeah.
And that would have been the intention.
Yeah.
Fascinating what you can find in your permanent collection.
We're still finding things that are fascinating.
Well, and that leads me to the question, right? So will you be able to rotate more things from the permanent collection into spaces in the newly renovated museum? Is that one of the strengths of what you've done here?
Absolutely. Yeah. We talked earlier about the Cabinets of Curiosity. We can swap themes, adjust shelves, so you find a new experience every time. But I think where that might be most prevalent is actually the Immersed in Nature section. It's moved wings, but it brings back a lot of the taxidermy, the wildlife from the old Berkshire backyard. And while we love that space, the way some of it was installed made it very difficult to swap out. Right.
Okay. So in other words, it was permanently there. It was hard to move and hard to change.
It was very hard to change, very hard to move, and we still have those objects. They will take additional conservation work to make them suitable for display again. But thankfully, on the other side of the building, what we're setting up is something a little more immersive. We're mixing more art in, some more sections for interactivity for all ages. And still bringing those wildlife pieces for the people in a way that can change pretty rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
So again,
And one of the experiences that we wanted to bring to our public is a room that has videos playing in it, which is in a 360-degree environment. Do you want to talk a little bit about what you're going to be putting in there?
It's really cool.
Yeah.
So, again, it goes back to that kind of founding vision of Zenas Crane, our founder, wanting to bring these experiences to people in the Berkshires. We have this kind of room. You can go in there, and playing will be these 360-degree immersive videos from like, all over the world.
Mm.
We'll be able to get new ones, refresh them constantly, be able to experience environments in Europe, Asia, anywhere.
Mm. Imagine the world that Zenas Crane must have thought in the early, you know, late 1800s, early 1900s, and not being able to imagine the kind of technology that we have now to bring those experiences to people, right? And but nothing is really a substitute for going and experiencing it in person, in the place, right? Like, I imagine that all the things that we could be, you know, finding out about on the internet or on in movies or other media, but something about coming to a space like the Berkshire Museum and experiencing it in person and with other people and with people that can guide you through, you know, what you're experiencing, that's a different experience, right?
And I just want to just mention the Zenas Crane's his wish was to bring the world to Pittsfield. He was very impressed with the Metropolitan Museum of Art when it was getting opened. He was also friends with the secretary of the Smithsonian Institution, and that was being developed. And it was at the time, it's hard for the public to go travel to New York City or to Washington, whatever, to see these museums. So he personally, he's the one who bought the mummy, right? And he was trying to collect all of these different items, like geological specimens, and just to make it a very you know, multidisciplinary experience and historical objects. We have all sorts of very unusual historical objects, but he was just really thinking that far forward for the public. And so that was the beginning. That was the whole beginning of this very unusual collection that we have, but wonderful collection. And I just want to mention our museum just has a wonderful place then in the Berkshires, because what we have is different from the Clark. It's different from Massmoca. It's different from Norman Rockwell. It's different from the Williams College, you know, museum. But we all together can bring all sorts of wonderful collections to the communities that we are in. So
fortunate that we are, that we have all those institutions, you know, within a 30-minute radius, right, of Pittsfield. Just incredible, really. And as you say, they're all very different institutions. So it's not like you would just come to one and say, well, now I've seen this one, I don't really need to go to the other ones.
They're all wonderful. And we have the aquarium. So
that's right. And so what's the through line then from the days of Zenas Crane, where he built this museum to bring this to Pittsfield because people couldn't get out? And now that we can get places or that we can see things on the internet and stuff again, what makes this experience unique and interesting and desirable to have here? Why is it that we need this?
Well, I think you mentioned it a little bit before. I think there's absolutely a value and pride if you're a school kid in Pittsfield. You don't have to take a trip out to Boston, right? Or New York. You have this experience right here. It can help with your school. You're not just learning from a textbook about ancient cultures or wildlife from around the world. You can come and see yourself in your own city or in your own county.
Yeah. And how important is that education component to the Berkshire Museum in terms of how it functions and operates? It's a pretty major thing, right? They have the number of students and schools that make trips and make that a part of their educational experience.
I think it's actually a prime component of what we try to do here.
Yeah.
We have a great education manager, Joe Mastronardi, and he does great work reaching out to not to the schools in Pittsfield, but also further afield up in North Adams, down in South County, and trying to spread that reach and spread those experiences to the children across Berkshire County.
Because those might be experiences that some students would never have, right? They would never get to a museum, they would never be able to look and see these things at all if this weren't here.
That's true. And
some kids would have the opportunities from their family background and things, but some kids would not. Let's face it.
So we make it a real goal to offer as many free days as we can, just have activities that are always happening, so that when families come in, they can. There's all sorts of things that they can go to and interact with their families. But that is, I think, I would say that the partnership with the schools and the families of the Berkshires and Pittsfield is one of our primary targets as far as who we're trying to really serve.
Right.
Yeah.
Kim Bush Tomeo, the executive director of the Berkshire Museum, and Will Doerr, the curator of the Berkshire Museum, are my guests here this morning on Morning Drive. If you're just tuning in, we've got a few minutes left of the show. Still lots to explore here about what is happening. Just a reminder that we've got a July 29th date coming up, and that is the reopening date of the Berkshire Museum. It was just announced a couple days ago, so we're kind of amplifying that a little bit here this morning. And then there is going to be an opening celebration weekend on Friday, August 7th. Let's talk about the two exhibitions that are going to be opening when those doors open, right? There are two, and maybe you'll tell me about them. One is called Voices of Rebellion, and you can fill that in for me, Will, a little bit. And the other one is Mediterranean. Mm-hmm. So let's start with the Voices of Rebellion, and that sounds to me like 250th theme.
You'd be correct.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So you might have heard it before. It's the 250th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence. And what we wanted to do at the Berkshire Museum is really make those connections to the people from or deeply connected with the Berkshires. Where we started with this exhibition is, what did the Revolution mean to the people who lived here? Mm. We wanted to explore different narratives, look at not just men, but also women, black people living in the Berkshires, indigenous people living here, why they joined or didn't join the Revolution over the course, especially the early years, the causes, the immediate rebellion, including the raid on Fort Ticonderoga and the siege in Boston, and the ideological revolution that actually took place. Mm. And looking at this through that prism of what did it mean for people back then, prompting and hoping people to think, what does it mean to you today and what you hope it means in the future?
So this is an exhibition that is homegrown from the Berkshire Museum. This is not a traveling exhibition that's mm-hmm. coming in, right? So what kinds of things will people see when they experience this particular exhibition? What, aside from sort of the, well, you tell me.
So it's really comprised of several different aspects, right? We have pieces of our collection from the Revolutionary era, including we have this a wonderful jacket. Just like a hunting jacket, which is the type of jacket people, militia, especially at the time, didn't have regular uniforms, especially
right.
at the start of the war. These are the things they would have worn when going out to fight in the Revolution. Also, we do have a few muskets from the era. Mm-hmm. We do have some pistols associated with specific individuals from Massachusetts in the area. Additionally, we do have probably the crowning piece, an early broadside of the Declaration of Independence.
Really?
And for audiences, what that is the Declaration is signed, and then how they spread it is various printmakers are making copies, these broadsides, and then spreading the news.
Okay.
And so we have a very early copy from Ezekiel Russell that made its way to Pittsfield.
And then stayed here, it sounds like. Huh?
Yeah. Zenas Crane made sure that we had it. Mm. And when the museum opened in April of 1903, there's a long article that was in what was called the Pittsfield Star or something, before it was the Eagle.
Mm-hmm.
And they're interviewing Mr. Crane, and that was one of the pieces he mentioned. He said it's very rare, and they are really rare. We just had it cleaned and looked at by the conservation studio in Williamstown and reframed. Hmm. So that will be on the wall.
So is this a document that people have seen in a while, or has it been stowed away in the collection?
They showed it a couple years ago.
Yeah, we showed it. We had a 120th anniversary a few years ago, back in 2023, and we showed it then. Hmm. But
it's something that has to be cared for very carefully, I would imagine, that old of a document.
Yeah. Especially works on paper like
There's
that.
There's very few of them. Different printers did it in different places around the U.S. And then there's just not that many out there. So ours is considered extremely rare.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's really wonderful. But also in this exhibition, I should mention, we did also, continuing our talk about schools, want to engage some of the school children in Berkshire County, whether it's some artwork of theirs about what the Revolution means, but also we wanted some of their interpretive input. Some of the labels for some of the objects were actually written by some local school children working through our education manager.
Yeah. Very cool. Yeah. So that's one of the exhibitions that will be available to view when the museum reopens on July 29th. The other one is called Mediterranean, so it's American art, but go on with that. What else? And that one is an exhibition that's coming into the museum mm-hmm. from yes. somewhere?
Yes. So it is actually coming, it's being shipped from Texas. Is the collection of the Graham T. Welliford Foundation. Mm-hmm. And it is about 73 works, paintings done by 19th century American artists as they were visiting the Mediterranean basin. Oh. And so it's picturing flora, fauna, people, buildings that they would have seen in Italy, Greece, Turkey, mm-hmm. Syria, Egypt, Morocco. Mm-hmm.
And again, at that time, traveling like that was sort of limited to certain class of people. Certain only very few people would be able to afford to do that and to create that art, right? That they witnessed, that they saw, and brought that back. So that's fascinating. And where is that going to be in the museum space?
So that's going to be on the second floor. Both these exhibitions are on the second floor, and our rotating galleries on the south half. Okay. The second floor.
And tell us again how, the crane room upstairs, was that modified, changed? Is that all still in place?
It is still in place. Uh-huh. There's been, I think, two major modifications.
Okay.
Most of the crane room, as you may remember it, would be the same. There was some conservation work done on the fountain. Mm. But the two main things is, one, we added some much needed sound baffling on the walls.
It was a very loud room for anyone who likes audio.
Yeah, and it's much improved.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Right? Yeah. And the other part is we still had some of that original 1930s Art Deco furniture that we were able to conserve, refresh, while still keeping to its original design. And that's actually going to be able to be in the space, to be used by the public, to be a little more comfortable space to inhabit.
I would like to say that space itself was designed by women. All the furniture, everything was designed. The only thing that was not done by women was Sterling Calder's carvings in that space. Of course, that's Alexander Calder's father. But everything was designed by women. Mostly out of New York City, right?
A lot of them out of New York City.
And when was that done?
That was 1936.
And
that's that was the result of the museum's first director after the Zenas Crane and the Anthoneum turned over the museum and all of the collections to a board of trustees. So once that's when the museum was established as a nonprofit art museum under direction of the board of trustees, and then they hired their first director, who was a woman. And she was the first female director of a nonprofit museum in the U.S.
Wow.
She came to Pittsfield. That's great. And she's the one who decided to close the courtyard, create the theater, and create the crane room. And Alexander Calder had his very first exhibition in our museum. And he also did a commission piece for the aquarium. The theater that we still have on view. Mm. So it was a very historic time. And that room is really important. That crane room is quite wonderful. It's named after Ellen Crane. Yeah.
And she was the wife of Zenas Crane. She had a major part in some of the early evolution. Mm. And so her children, when she passed.
The museum has a lot of really fascinating history, I think. I think it's really interesting. Another reason why I wanted to apply for the position.
Yeah, exactly. That's groundbreaking, and you're standing on tall shoulders, right? Yeah. Kim Bush-Tomeo and Will Doerr are here on Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM, talking about the Berkshire Museum's reopening on July 29th. And the opening celebration weekend, we didn't talk about that yet, so let's get that in before we're done. That's happening about a week or so, week and a half after the opening date. And what will people expect when that weekend comes?
Well, I have my notes here.
No, that's perfectly fine. That's why we have a radio show.
We are going to have a lot of free activities for all ages happening throughout the day, and with guided tours. And there's a science show that our staff is going to put together. And then we're really working on getting some docents together that can start to share information about the exhibitions and the spaces, go and then teach a little bit in the aquarium. We have we also have a family activity center that we created with carpeted floor, bookshelves, toys and seating could be in there. So there's places for families with, you know, children, if they just want to go sit down and enjoy reading a book to their child, that's there. We've got a lot of other things happening.
We've got a lot. I think the three big events right off the start is there is like a ribbon cutting on the Wednesday, July 29th. But most importantly, I think we have our Saturday, August 8th, community reopening celebration day, which will be a free day for everyone in the community to come in, explore not just the new spaces, but different programs we'll have in those spaces to kind of welcome everyone.
Yeah, that was what I was referring to. Sorry, I should have said it was for October. I'm sorry, August 8th. That's the August 8th date.
That's the August 8th date.
But in general, everything, we will have lots of staff and others in the galleries helping people get around, teach them a little bit about what's new, share that information.
And just explore the space, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, there will be, again, familiar experiences, refreshed experiences. But, I mean, I think the building, too, itself will feel fundamentally changed and refreshed. And, I mean, I can't speak enough about the work of our architects, especially the architect designer, Yo, from Studio How, and especially local to us, the architects from Bradley, especially Mark Eichhorn and Robert. They've done great work. It's been a pleasure.
And that's specialty work too, right?
That's
not just building out an office space. This is really, really tricky stuff with an older building and knowing that you're creating something that needs to last another 50, 100 years before it gets refreshed again, right? That's kind of a momentous occasion.
Specialty work done by local workers, right? Whether it's Tierney, who did a lot of the contract work, and or again, Bradley Architects right here in Pittsfield. It's great to have such local talent here.
Good to hear. Well, that is an exciting time coming up. I wish everybody gets a chance to put that in their calendar for, it sounds like the big day there, Saturday the 8th, but that whole weekend, right, Friday the 7th to the 8th of August, the family celebration weekend, the free day where you get to come and explore the new spaces of the Berkshire Museum, the refreshed galleries, and the new aquarium. I'm imagining it myself, but I'm sure it won't match up to the actual walking through and seeing what it's like. So I think we're all looking forward to that. Well, I want to say thank you both for being here. Any thing you'd like to reach out for? You mentioned docents. That would be volunteers, probably. If people wanted to volunteer and get involved and do things like that, how would they get in touch with you and connect and do those things?
They can call. They can just call the general number at the for the museum, and we do have a staff member who is starting that program, so they can connect with them directly once they. They call the museum.
And what's that main number?
Oh, boy.
Sorry. I put you on
I've
the spot
right
there.
Here. Actually, I got
413-437-1711.
Yep.
There you go.
And that'll get you to the main direct line, and you'll be able to be sent on your correct path from there.
Yeah. I'd highly recommend that. All right. Kim Bush, Tomeo, and Will Doerr, thank you so much for being here this morning talking about the Berkshire Museum. Best of luck putting this all together in the last few weeks you've got before that that key opens the door and the ribbon gets cut on the 29th.
Well, thank you for having us.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're looking forward to having you come for a tour.
Like I said, I'll see if I can make it there for my birthday, but if not, maybe I'll be there a little later than that. All right. Thanks, everybody, for joining us here on Morning Drive this morning. And tomorrow morning, we have a special program of we have Congressman Richard Neal, who will be joining me on a conversation tomorrow morning. So don't miss that. That's going to be very interesting. Listen in. And we will see you again on Morning Drive. Take care, everybody.